Xavi. He's done it. Four. Balotelli. Aguero. Cahill. Cahill. Tim Cahill has done it again. What a goal by Tim Cahill.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Premier League Nightclub podcast. My name is Damon, and with me, of course, as usual, I have the Woodra and Woody, mate. We haven't actually spoken, just you and me, for like a month. This is new times for Nightclub FC.
Yeah, it is, mate. It's good to see your face. Got you on a video chat at the moment. Good catch up. I know we've been texting a lot, but we haven't actually seen each other. Yeah. So it's good to actually see you, Damon. What have you been up to?
Well, mate, obviously, this is a Premier League podcast, so we've been watching a lot of Prem. But other than that, I don't know, mate. Just doing work when I can, all that sort of stuff. I must say the weather here, I know we're not going to talk about the weather that much. But in Melbourne, for our listeners in Melbourne, it's actually been fucked. Like one day it'll be like 25 and sunny. The next day it's pissing down rain. You can't get used to it down here in Melbourne. And it's not helping with the COVID numbers down here because people are just getting sick all the time, naturally with the flu. So like it's just causing mayhem all around. So Woodrow, what about you, mate? What have you been up to?
Man, I won't lie. Uni has clamped down on me like a motherfucker. So that's pretty much been my life so far. And I've been sneaking in plenty of prem. Don't you worry, Damo. Mm-hmm. But like you said, the weather's pretty grim at the moment. The last couple of weeks have been pretty bad. Hopefully, when we can actually see each other, the weather eases up a bit. Might actually record a podcast outside. So who knows how that'll go.
That's definitely something on the bucket list. Definitely something.
100%. 100%. 100%.
I love how it's like 2 minutes into the pod and we've dropped two F-bombs and we've talked about the weather. This a rusty start, but hopefully we can get going. Woody, I know we had Julian de Stoop on, obviously, on our last episode. Absolute legend. Mm-hmm. And I think he has a question in line for us, which we're going to hear later on in the pod. But there is one thing that I wanted to touch on before we sort of get stuck into the Prem and stuff. It's more about our podcast. I don't know if you actually remember this because it was that long ago, but we're on the EPL Live app, Australia's number one Premier League app. We actually haven't spoken about it on the pod because since it happened, we've only had the one episode with the guest. So yeah, everybody get your phones out right now and download EPL Live. It's Australia's number one Premier League app and we're on it. It's unreal, isn't it?
Damn. Mate, I couldn't believe it when they actually approached us and they said, "Hey guys, I want to feature you on the app." Well, let you clarify that one, Damo. But yeah, when we got on there, I honestly couldn't believe it because for us, it's something that we use a lot for our analysis. The stats so much more in depth than what you get off the Premier League site, what you actually get off the Premier League app. So for us to get on there as a featured podcast is actually really, really cool because then when we're doing our research or where we're looking at a game, we just flick over to the podcast section and listen to ourselves a little bit, just listen to the intro and then head back. Get the listenership up a little bit.
Well, actually, this is one thing I did want to touch on, and I feel like it's a good segue into the actual pod get moving here. But our numbers, our listen numbers, let's be real, they've been pretty good the first 2 weeks. So clearly, the new structure's working in some sort of fashion. People are liking it. We've had some good responses. We've even communicated with a few people via the Instagram. So people listening, that they know who they are. So that's awesome. We chucked out a few questions, or we asked for a few questions to come to us during the week, and we've got a handful. So for the first time in a good year, we are going to be doing a segment to answering your questions. I actually haven't even discussed with you, Woody, what we're going to call it. I'll get into it soon, but I was sort of looking at, I was going to call it like Twitter Talk, but we've also got the Insta. So I was like, oh, that can't really work. And then I was like, social media. I'm like, what can I go with? And I was trying to find like cocktails that started with S. Or like, social media shakeup or something. But I'm like, shakeup's used in like so many ones. And but then like all of the S ones are shit ass. It's literally just like social media sex on the beach. I'm like, no, that can't work. And it's
actually I do like that one. Social media sex on the beach.
We might have to put a call out to the people. And if you can think of a segment name for our social media, interaction, because I got a feeling we're going to be doing it more often than not these days. Mm. Hit us up on the comment of this episode release or just DM us. If you actually send one in and we end up using it, because you end up really liking it, we'll give you a shout out on the pod, of course, and we might send a little something your way if it's good enough. Is that fair call, Woodrow?
Damon, it's actually a really, really good point that you bring up just about the social media in general. I have to say our Insta and Twitter have been popping off recently. Yeah. Obviously with, you know, the favorable game times as of late with the Premier League, the Twitter presence has been increased. And then also the Insta presence has been increased as well. And I have to say the amount of engagement that we're getting is really encouraging because I think it's just showing that we're not just providing a podcast, we're actually providing a platform for fans to sort of interact and also chat to us. And I think some of the chats that we've had on Instagram with some of our fans or some of our listeners recently have been unreal. We just, it's so rewarding to actually have listeners come in and message us about podcasts that they've listened to of the Premier League Nightclub, maybe 6 or 7 episodes ago and reference it to the one they just heard. So for us, it's massive. And on that note, Damo, we've actually really close to hitting 3,000 followers on the gram.
Oofed.
Massive, massive, massive nightclub just goal that we've put out. We never thought we'd probably get here at the start of season one. And I think we've definitely exceeded expectations come season two as well.
Yeah, it's been unreal. And shout out to those people who we have been chatting to. I know we've already sort of mentioned it, but it's good chat. Like, it's genuinely like, it's not just shit ass football Twitter banter that's like useless crap. It's genuinely like good stuff and like good analysis and just like fair play talk. And I quite enjoy it. Because obviously Woody, sometimes it's you replying, sometimes it's me. So one of us is sort of reading another conversation whilst the other's replying sometimes. So it's sort of a nice little vibe we got going. And yeah, I do quite enjoy interacting with the fans. So if you've got anything you want to talk about, feel free to DM us. We most likely will reply. So Woody, with that being said,
straight away.
100%. With that being said though, Woody, we do need to get into something football related other than us. And that is the fact that 144 goals have been scored in the opening 4 match weeks for Premier League. Outrageous. Yeah. In week 2, it was the equal record. And I'm pretty sure we just finished with a 41 goal weekend, which was something like 4th most.
Yeah, mate, it's ridiculous. And I think if anything, it's just so beneficial for viewers and almost for new fans of the Premier League because they get to see so many more goals come in a match week.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest thing for us, I think with our mates that don't especially follow the football, will say, oh, it's so boring, you might only get one goal a game. Mate, this season has been nothing short of goals. Let me tell you, Damo. And us watching games, we are literally messaging each other nonstop, commentating the goals that are going in. So for us, it's so rewarding because we just get to see more action. I think that's also probably due to some VAR maybe ramping up in terms of the effect that they have on games. However, I feel as if... Actually, this is an interesting question for you, Damo. Do you feel as if the lack of crowds or the lack of presence at a stadium has anything to do with the increase in goals?
100%, mate. 100%. I've been on this. I can't even remember if you're like fishing me into something that I've already spoken to you about.
No, I'm not.
We haven't had this conversation yet because I've definitely said it to others. I'm not sure if I've said it to you. But actually, I think I was saying it to my dad, actually, because he was asking me how Villa scored 7, which we'll get into soon, and all that sort of stuff, and how Spurs scored 6. And I'm like, you know, to be honest, it has to be the crowd. There's no, you know, that, as there's a fucking, like, counter-attack and, like, people are about to shoot and that sort of stuff. And, you know, take the Man United-Tottenham game that we just watched over the weekend. It was 2-1 within 7 minutes. Both teams had took both their chances. Specifically, the 2 Spurs goals at the start, I reckon they only score one of them if there's a crowd. Like, I have no reason to say that, but it's just like Harry Kane having that, you know, quick idea to just put it through to Son straight away, and Son having the composure to to tap it over De Gea. I just feel like that there's an extra 30% difficulty when 75,000 people are watching you do it. Like, I just think there's something in that. Not to say they wouldn't have scored, but I could take that into so many other games, that same sort of attitude. But Woody, there is one thing as well. You talked about how there's been more goals because of VAR. It goes both ways sometimes. Okay, I'm sure it's in the positive, but let's take the Villa versus Fulham game a couple of weeks ago. That finished 3-0. I didn't watch the game. I woke up the next morning, saw Villa had won 3-0. And I was like, oh, okay, like, fair enough. Then later that day, I actually read about the game. Fulham had 2 goals cut out because of VAR. So, like, it goes both ways. And it's so much more drama. And, look, everyone's going to have their opinion on VAR. But it's been an unbelievable first month of the year. And we've just got hit a roadblock with international break. Absolute joke. that the international break is now.
Every you harp on about this every international break, no matter what time it comes on the season, Damo. You despise the international break, don't you?
Mate, why have we got one now? Literally half the Liverpool squad have COVID as well. We're just going to spread it across the country. It's ridiculous, man. Like, I actually don't understand it at all. I'm probably going to get roasted for this because I'm not sure if it's true, but I'm pretty sure they're all friendlies at the moment anyway. I don't think they're qualifiers. So I'm like,
fairly sure they are friendlies as well.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just ridiculous.
I think from the COVID perspective, I don't think that's maybe in the... again, I might get roasted for this. It's not really in the forefront of the national team's mind about the COVID situation, because if Sadio Mane, right, clearly Liverpool's most important player, gets COVID, just gets omitted from the squad, what happens?
Yeah, he's everyone out else for 2 weeks, boys. He'll be back.
Yeah, everyone else could have it, but it could be asymptomatic. So, you know, we don't even know. Half the Premier League could very well have it, and we just don't even know. And they don't even know, because they're probably not doing the same testing as same testing that's happening in Australia. But it's just ridiculous to think, like, if someone just has COVID, then they're just removed from the squad from 2 weeks. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, I guess, like, from everything we've known about the virus for 6 to 8 months now, everything we thought we'd learned, technically, we just assumed that the whole Liverpool squad would have it. Like, all we've heard is how contagious it is, et cetera, and, you know, we're no medical experts here, and it's sort of almost irrelevant what we're talking about, but I just think it's worth noting. It's a bit strange that, you know, 2 or 3 players here and there from a team here and there have got it. I don't know, maybe there's just something in that. It's a bit weird how... they're not all, I don't know how they're training, whether they're in like small groups when they're training, but by memory, I'm pretty sure it's altogether full contact. So, and I mean, obviously they're playing games properly on the weekend. So yeah, there's a bit something in that, with their approach to COVID, but they keep the season going. And as football fans, I'm not going to complain. From a health perspective, it's a bit different, but we're purely football fans on this podcast. So that's all I'm going to leave it at that. And Woody, for the first time in months, I'm going to say it. Are you ready for winners and losers?
I thought you were going to ask me some quick fire results, but I thought we're not doing quick fire results anymore.
Nah, mate. The gong sound effect is gone. Put away.
It's gone. Gone. Question though, instead of scrapping the gong, should we apply it to something else?
Well, I was considering putting it in maybe like every time we stuff up, like every time we like talk over each other, just boom.
Say what we shouldn't do. We shouldn't put it every time that you swear, because we already have it about 15 times this podcast. I think you've sworn more times this podcast than you have in the last year and a half. So
yeah,
I think we'll scrap that one.
It's just how it's going to be from now on. I've just put the E on the podcast publish thing that I haven't done very often, so that they know it's, you know, 18 and over. So it's all good.
Yeah. Damo, to answer your question, yes, I'm ready for winners and losers.
Oi, did someone say winners and losers?
Sure did, mate.
Alrighty, Woody, you go first. Who is your winner?
My winner is Leeds United. And I think Paige Cardona is going to love me for saying this, but these guys know how to score goals. They scored 7 goals in their first 2 weeks, Damo. Pushed the champions right to the end of the game in that, obviously, 4-3 thriller in the opening day. And we're lucky pretty much to not come away with points. I was really surprised they didn't. They've already taken points off City, and they've beaten the Blades. Leeds hit the Premier League running, and I think that's safe to say anyone can say that. And I think... the thing was, teams thought Leeds were going to be tough to play against, but they didn't realize that they would be this good. No one thought that they would be this good. And I think looking at the squad they've got, they've brought in some fantastic signings, obviously including Rafinha, like you said, Damo. I think which are going to make them not just a competitive Premier League, you know, mainstay, but have a Premier League list worthy of competing with everyone in the league. And I think that's a really important distinction to make. And for me, they're only going to get better further as they go into the season and the more accustomed they get to the pace and physicality of the league.
Damon. Yeah, 100%. How about Bamford? The Bam.
Bamford. Bam. Bam, and the dirty's gone. He is doing wonders for my lackluster Premier League fantasy team, mate. I'll tell you what. is my only shining light. Only shining. But they were, I want to touch into that because it's a depressing conversation that we have to have about that. But who is your winner?
Mate, my winner is Aston Villa. Dude, what a turnaround from this club. I'm not going to go ahead and say this is the only reason they stayed up. They played some good football towards the end of last season. But let's not forget, they got away with it against Sheffield United. They got a point that they should not have got, and it kept them in the Premier League ultimately.
Yep.
And since then, they haven't looked back. They're absolutely flying. They've conceded two, both of those against Liverpool. But no worries. We'll just smash seven past them in return. Obviously, that was the story of the season so far, but they're only second in the league to Everton, but they have a game at hand because they didn't play the first week. It's worth noting that in a practice match, they beat Man United 1-0 at Old Trafford in that first week. Now, I know that's not very, you know, relevant towards the season, but it's something in that. And that goal was scored by Ollie Watkins, who scored a hat-trick in the first half against Liverpool. He's in my fantasy team, although I had him on the bench for Liverpool because I assumed he hadn't scored at all. So why would he score against Liverpool? But then goes bags a hat-trick, but that's a whole other thing. Also, Jack Grealish, there was lots of talk about him leaving. Not only has he stayed, but he's gotten better. I actually think he's gotten better. Last season, Graham Souness on Sky Sports, I almost criticised him. I'm not sure how long ago it was, because he said being the most fouled player in the Premier League isn't a good thing. It means you're holding the ball for too long, which I didn't necessarily agree with. But I could sort of understand why he thought it. He thought maybe Jack Grealish was sort of worrying about what he could do too much and wasn't bringing others into the game. I think Jack Grealish, regardless of his two goals against Liverpool, he is starting to get more assists. He's starting to really not... He's having more influence on games without being the star man anymore, even though he still is, if that sort of makes sense. So I think Grealish taking his game to a new level, which is impressive considering he probably would have preferred to be playing for a Man United or a Liverpool right now. So, you know, that being said, I think Villa would be ecstatic at how they've started the season. I know it's only 4 weeks in, but, you know, you'd have to say they're going to be mid-table, worst-case scenario, the way they're going.
Damo, do you feel as if, and I don't want to harp on this winner for too long, but do you feel as if Villa... is a classic case of actually bringing in quality players rather than just overpriced players, rather than making one elite signing in that, which they tried to do, you know, a couple of seasons ago. Is this a case of them actually investing in players that fit the style of play that they're playing?
I think there's a little bit of that. You know, they spent a lot of money when they first got promoted, and I wouldn't say they flopped. A lot of people said they're doing a Fulham. And look, they almost did, as we touched on a couple of minutes ago. But I think, yeah, they've been a lot more respectful to the transfer market this time around. I think it's worked for them. They've been loyal to guys like Grealish. I don't think they necessarily stopped Grealish from going, but at the same time, it was a good relationship between him and the club. No one came hard enough. He stayed. They've picked up Ollie Watkins, who, as I said, he took him a while to score, but he hadn't been playing badly at all. And, you know, I think they've been really respectful to the transfer market, but also diligent enough in the market to really do some damage. And we're seeing the results for it now. I think the big thing is that they've only conceded two. That's what I'm most impressed about. We spoke about things a lot last year, but at the end of the day, Villa were still conceding. I think now we're really starting to see why we spoke about Mings a lot, because he's finally getting some help around him. So, yeah, I'm really happy with
for sure
how they're going. Woody, who's your loser?
I didn't want to talk about Manchester United, but I feel as if you almost couldn't, considering the start that they've had. And I think this is maybe one of the worst starts we've ever seen as fans. And I think it's fair to say, Damo, if we lived in a fair world, United would be heading into match week 5 on 0 points.
If it was a fair world. Yeah.
And the reason why I say that is that they got touched up by Palace in week 2, touched up. Touched up by Brighton in week 3, and who knows how they actually secured those 3 points. They shouldn't have even got one. They didn't deserve the draw. Brighton dominated that game. They were gifted 3 points, and then probably the most embarrassing display we've seen in the last 6 years was the 6-1 thumping from Tottenham, right? It looks like the whole United squad are just witches hats on the pitch. And this club is in a hole. Don't get me wrong. We've talked about it so much off air, and it's going to take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of money, and it's going to take a lot of change, not only from the manager, but above the manager as well. And I'm talking director of football. I'm talking board members. I'm talking potentially even owners, for them to get back to being what they call themselves as the biggest club in the world. I don't want to harp on it for too long, but in short, I feel as if they have to be the loser of the start of the season so far.
I think, Woody, you touched on it perfectly by saying, there's going to be a lot of money and a lot of change. But I think you need change before money. If you spend the money first, it delays change even further. And I think that's what's happened over the last 5 years. You know, you can spend trillions, but if the right people aren't in the right places, you're not going to be as successful as you should be. That's sort of the case there at Old Trafford. But yeah, moving on, my loser is the other United in the league, Sheffield United. They have been incredibly disappointing. And I think the disappointment stems, for me, not because of, say, the fact they haven't won a game yet. For their standards, obviously they would have liked to, and that's one thing. They've only scored one goal. That's disappointing. But they've completely lost their identity. Going to their stadium, it was hell for other teams, even the biggest teams. Liverpool got away with it last year. Remember the Dean Henderson mistake? It was difficult going to Sheffield United. But now, they're an easy team to play against. The Leeds loss was a damning game from their perspective. Leeds never looked like losing. Okay, every now and then Sheffield United got a chance, but that's just because Leeds are very open in how they play. Sheffield United were not as anything like they were last season. I think that would be really disappointing. They've got some key injuries. Players are terribly out of form. Guys like Basham and Egan, not even close to what they were producing last season. They can't get the striker situation right. They got Brewster from Liverpool, so that's a big signing. But at the end of the day, he's still pretty young, doesn't have a lot of Premier League experience. And in a team that at the moment might not give him a lot of chances in front of goal, it'd be interesting to see how he goes. But yeah, definitely my loser at the moment, given that they sit second last behind Fulham, who looked dreadful.
Well, like you said, Damo, I think they are struggling. Obviously, they've only scored the one goal of the season, which is essentially a consolation versus Arsenal. I don't know if you saw that goal as well, David McGoldrick's goal, but it was an absolute banger. So that means they're not really creating the chances they did. And one thing that I sort of took of note coming out of the last match week was that other than Fulham, who sit on 104 crosses so far for the season, Sheffield United are second with 90-something, right? Mm. Now, we know that Sheffield, the Blades play predominantly with overlapping centre-backs. They have this very fancy sort of crossing system. Do you think maybe teams are finding them out?
Perhaps. As I'm sure teams would have done their research on them. Teams like that don't finish eighth or whatever it was and then not get looked at. 100% they would have been assessed in the offseason. Maybe even copied at times. 100%. Like, why wouldn't you? The system's clearly worked. Spoken about it heaps last season that they didn't really have any out-out superstars. There was no reason why they were pushing for Europe other than the tactical side of the game and obviously their work ethic, which was instilled in them really well. But this season, it seems to have dropped off. Perhaps they were super disappointed about not making Europe, considering the position they were in a couple of weeks before the season ended. So, there's a lot of factors. And I think I touched on it before the season started that I was worried about Sheffield United being able to back it up. And so far, I'm being proved right. So, yeah.
Mm. All right, Damo. It is. Looks like it's time to the yet-named new segment. We'll go with social media source for now. And I don't know if we're going to put in... I don't know if we're going to put in intro music, but we'll see how this goes. Maybe the social media source is a nightclub cocktail that we might have to cook up just to give the moniker some meeting. But do you want to kick us off with a bit of Twitter talk, Damo?
Sweet. Yeah. So we got one key question on Twitter talk, which I really wanted to talk about. And that was from @TomMUFC8. Now it's worth noting, his name's Tom, obviously. And he is the host of the United podcast. Absolute legend of a bloke, very vocal on Twitter, runs a really good podcast. So United fans or any fans of want to hear about Man United, Australian podcast, go listen to theirs. United podcast, if you didn't hear it first. Great podcast. Go listen to that. And he asks, he says, discuss 36-year-old Thiago I assume he means Thiago Silva.
Thiago.
On a free is fantastic business, but 33-year-old Cavani is too old for the EPL. Discuss. I think he's sort of talking about the attitude towards the transfers. And Woody, I'm just going to... I did a little bit of thinking about it, and it was something that I'd already sort of thought about before Tom mentioned this, and that is that Cavani was a... pretty much a first signing, second signing of a transfer window where four new players were brought in for Man United. Van der Beek was the first. He was the second, then followed by Telles and so on. I'm not counting the winger from Atlanta because he doesn't come till January. And I'm also not going to count Igalo because he was already at the club. So Thiago Silva, on the other hand, is one of seven Chelsea signings. Now, let's sort of be generous here. You'd say of Chelsea's seven signings, I'd say five, once they all settle, are in their starting 11. Havertz, Werner, Chilwell, Ziyech, and given Kepa's form, we'll chuck Mendy in there as well. I think that they start in Chelsea's team if they're all playing their best. Out of the Man United signings, do any of them break into that first 11? I'm not sure. I would say classify Man United's best 11 as the same right now as it was at the end of last season. And that is a damning assessment of their transfer window. And I think why people are so critical of the Cavani signing. It's those sort of signings are almost meant to be cherries on top and things that you can afford to go wrong. Man United have put their eggs in this basket, which is really strange. I'm not completely on board with it.
You're right. I think there's an important maybe distinction to make as well, Tom, and this might be sort of what you're getting at. Thiago Silva is a centre-back, right? Much more forgiving than maybe what a 33-year-old striker may play in the Premier League. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. And I feel as if you look at the centre-backs that have lasted in the league for a significant amount of time, majority have played to that 35-year-old age, the ones that have been mainstays at clubs and the ones that will go down in folklore as some of the maybe the best centre-backs of the generation of the Premier League era. But then we look at Cavani, for example. A lot of the strikers in the Premier League sort of move on around that 33-year-old age. So that's the thing as well. The timeline for these players are so different based upon their positions. I think Tom asks an interesting question because 33-year-old striker, can he actually keep up with the pace of the Premier League anymore? Especially for a team that doesn't hold possession, that relies on pace on a counter-attack. It's a good question. And Damo, I think that's something you mentioned before, is that United actually haven't done anything that has improved their best 11 at the moment. If anything, they've just strengthened their squad for cup games, for Champions League, for you know, those lower level games. So for me, 33, is it too old? Is it too old for the FA Cup? No. But is it too old for the Premier League to make an impact and secure top four? Yes. For me, it is.
Mm-hmm. I think it's also worth noting that it screamed panic, and that's why it copped a lot of criticism. Oh,
100%.
Thiago Silva was done weeks ago. Cavani hadn't even been linked with Man United up until about 3 days to go in the window. So I think there's that element. Now, unless it's the best kept secret in world football by Man United, I don't think they were planning on getting Cavani when they went into this transfer window.
Yeah. I was actually reading an article, I think today, Damon, sorry to cut you off, was that it was one of these, I guess, guesses about what Ollie's top four transfer targets were. And that was Sancho, Grealish, Upamecano, and Nathan Ake, right? Obviously, none of which are at the club. But if you look at the quality of players that they've brought in, if we look at a Cavani compared to a Sancho, obviously different positions, but attacking nonetheless, there's 10 years age difference. 13 years age difference, right? Clear distinction in quality as well. And that's the thing. I think United have just settled for guys that have been successful at another club, but don't necessarily... won't, you know, they're just the names. Cavani is a name signing. That's all it is. And to give him the number seven is a joke in itself. It's something to try and appease fans. And I think that's something that United fans have seen too much in the last 6 years for me. I mean, I don't know. What's your take?
It does very much seem like history repeating itself, doesn't it? You know, you'd almost, I get the need for an attacking option. I understood it. But to not back yourselves in to bring in, it didn't have to be Sancho. They couldn't get Dembele done. Do you know what I mean? And so I don't mind them sticking to their guns on the Dembele one because they wanted him for a loan just in case he got injured, which I sort of get given how injury prone Dembele is. But just the for me, it screamed a lack of confidence and a lack of organization off field to have to get 100%. Cavani instead of having options B and C for a younger and another option long term rather than a one season fix. So yeah,
mate. To be honest, for United, that just takes me straight back to, I can't remember what year it was. It might have been 2014-15 when they wanted Toni Kroos, but they settled for Fellaini on the closing day. It's the same thing. Like, they want Sancho, but they're settling for a 33-year-old Cavani. It's the same story over and over again. Anyway, Damo, I think we've gone
so far off topic.
It's so far, Tom, you sucked us in. You sucked us in, Tommy, and you've succeeded. I hope the discussion's good enough. And, Tommy, feel free to hit us back whether you're satisfied or not, or ask another question for another podcast. Damo, let's get into some Instagram talk, which hopefully we'll get through a little bit quicker. First one is at ben.slater. Question is, which teams had the best transfers? Damo, do you want to kick this one off?
Yeah, we touched on Chelsea, so we won't get sucked into their talk too much. I think you can only give them a pass on paper. Like, okay, you know, they haven't had the greatest of starts. The game against West Brom was pretty bad. They didn't beat Liverpool, although they looked quite okay against Liverpool. But I think long-term, they benefit hugely from this window. Look, when you sign seven players, they're not all going to come off. But if you back yourselves in with a good approach, then none of them were left of field. They were all quality players in previous seasons. All are relatively young other than Thiago Silva. So, you know, I think you have to give them pretty much an A for their transfer window. And of course, Everton. Everton were huge in the transfer window.
Massive. And
I think that is something we're going to touch on soonish. But yeah, they're my two. Woody, how about you?
Look, personally, I think it might be hard. We looked at Liverpool and we said at the end of the last season, how can someone possibly improve? Someone that's just off coming just come off winning the Champions League and has just absolutely put the league to bed with potentially 3 months to go. How can someone come and improve that squad? And then it's something, it draws maybe in on another point we said earlier on in the season and again last season as well, was that beyond Liverpool's best 11, their depth previously has not been that good. They've played, you know, an 11 under 18s, you know what I mean, or under 21s or under 23s in cup games, and that's potentially seen them, you know, lose massively. But it's tested our kids. However, I think bring in Thiago, bring in Diego Jota. I could not have thought of this happening. They have improved their squad that much. It is ridiculous. Just bringing in those players.
100%.
Well, we've already seen Jota play, and Thiago, the first 45 minutes he had was potentially the best 45 minutes of a centre midfielder so far we've seen in the first four match weeks. So, you know, I think Liverpool, for me, a massive winner. They won't go talked about, but for me, I think they couldn't have done anything more to improve their squad. Anyway, Damon, let's move on. Regular contributor, this guy, at DimosTree21. I know you'll love the shout-out. Yeah. Shout-out, Dimos. Love your work, mate. And the question is Werner a victim of the system or is he a flop?
This is a touchy one because we know a few Chelsea fans, Woodrow, and they don't like talking about this, do they? They don't like delving into Timo Werner's start to the Premier League. But I will not say he's a complete flop because he's only played four games. Give the guy a break. And he has been thrown around quite a bit by Lampard. I think he's played as a striker first game and Havertz stunk it up. So they moved Havertz to like a centre forward spot and played Werner on the left. And then they got a red card. So Werner was just running around like a headless chook pretty much. And you couldn't really do much. But it's safe to say that he probably has missed quite a few good chances. I think in his mind, he would have liked to have scored two or three by now, at least one. So I think the fact he hasn't scored is super disappointing. But at the same time, he's been experimented with as well, quite dramatically.
Yeah, mate, I couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. And I think if we're looking at, you know, Chelsea's front three, obviously their attacking options are plentiful now. So I think every game that we've seen has been almost a different attacking lineup. Obviously with Mount being chucked in there, Abraham's back in the fold as well. It's going to take a while for them to figure out what's their best system and who can play what. Obviously they're going with the three attackers, but it's going to be interesting to see how that sort of adapts. And there's still a lot of learning for Frank Lampard to do. And I don't want to slate him because I know that he listens to the pod and he actually messaged us on Insta a few times. But I think Timo's perspective, he would have liked to bag a couple by now. 100%.
Yeah, too easy. All right, Woody, who's the last one?
Our last one is at Benjamin DeVille. The question is, what influence do you think Thomas Partey will have at Arsenal? Damon, I'll kick this one off. And I personally, I think that it's going to allow Arsenal to completely change the way they play for their system. I think with, you know, Guendouzi, obviously, who moved on, you know, out of the team and potentially Partey coming in, they're going to allow much more defensive stability, I think, in the midfield. And for that reason being is that, you know, now they won't have to be, there won't be as much pressure passing out from the back. There'll be a lot more security. And I think they can do that with a lot more confidence. And I think that in itself plays more into Arsenal's cards. And this is just a classic case of a team going out, identifying what they need and buying that and willing to fork out the price.
I think it brings a huge amount of positivity to a club that desperately needed it for a long time now. They finally got, you know, okay, regardless of whether Arteta's the right man, looks like he probably is the way they're going. They're playing some really good football. But that manager brought calmness to the squad, to the fan base. Now they've got Thomas Partey for $45 million. That, again, brings more positivity. There's not a heap amount of pressure on him either. Okay, you want him to do well for $45 million, but it's not 60 and 70 that some of the other clubs have put into their midfielders. So I think that helps as well. And yeah, I think from an outsider's looking in, everybody thinks it's a good deal for Arsenal. So that brings positivity to the club, the fans, the players. And that is the biggest thing for mine. You can talk about tactics all you want. You can talk about Partey's ability. You can talk about his Partey skills, anything. But he's going to bring positivity to a club that desperately needed it. So I think that's the biggest thing. Cool. And Woody, I've got one more question for you.
Hit me.
And it's from the great man himself. It's not from me. It's from our previous guest. So basically, Jules loved his time on the pod so much, but he was like, Damo, he chucked me a text. He's like, Damo, I need to address something. Can you put a little voice thing in the pod for me? I'm like, all right, yeah, fine, whatever. Like, yeah, it's cool, Jules. Like, no stress. I don't mind if you contact me or not. Like, didn't make my day or anything. I don't mind. Yeah, no, it's chill. Anyway, so he shoots me. I actually missed his call, but I'll play the voice message for you right now, and we can go over it. All right?
Yeah, 100%. Let's do it.
Hello, boys. It's Julian the Stoop here. Hope you're both well. Got well on the show. We didn't even talk about Everton last week. Didn't even think they could be a top six team. But having watched them the last couple of weeks, they might be a top four team. Do you think any chance they could upset the apple cart and maybe keep a couple of big boys out of the top four? Have a great show.
Well, to be fair, I think with the Everton team, when we had Jules on, they'd probably beaten Spurs 1-0 and I think might have beaten West Brom 5-2. No, West Brom 5-2 when Dominic Calvert-Lewin scored a hat-trick. And so that was quite remarkable. And yeah, I think they can disrupt the apple cart, very much so. I think they're flying at the moment. And I actually, well, you know, Damo's dollars is just around the corner. But I think they might cause Liverpool a bit of trouble this weekend. And, you know, I think it would be unbelievable if they made top four. I think it would be great for the league. They're a team that had the foundation to be up there for a very long time. But they just haven't been able to, you know, take that next step. It looks like now with a few big signings in Hammers and not DCL, but he might as well be a new player. That's how good he's been. You know, those guys from Napoli, they've been good. They've been really good.
Look, I'm not going to lie, Damo. I didn't touch about it in which teams had the best transfers, but I think Everton has to be up there maybe as the biggest winner. They brought in Hammers, right? So underrated, I think, for what he can actually provide to a team. Allen and Doucouré. These are just only three guys they brought in. But looking at what they've done to the team, they've incorporated each one into the starting 11. They've narrowed their system. They've allowed Richarlison and Calvert-Lewin a lot more flexibility going forward. I think with Hammers there drifting onto the right, I think they've just got a player now that can slice and dice the opposition back four and through the midfield. And I think, look, who knows if they can sustain this run? Because I feel as if they're only maybe one or two injuries away from slumping back down to mid-table. But I think where they are at the moment, you can't help but ride the Everton hype train. It's unreal. We watch the games and bloody hell, are they good to watch or what?
Yeah, they're unreal. I think Allen got injured and they still played really well. They just brought in Sigurdsson. Doucouré has been really good, as you said, Woody. And look, they've got a few injuries now. I think Coleman went off just before the final whistle last weekend. So that's a cause for concern. I don't know how bad that injury is. But I think, as you said, Woody, if they can keep it together, not get too many injuries, you know, they've still got guys like Iwobi and stuff to come off the bench as well, which adds another dimension to their play. He came on for Richarlison last weekend and got an assist. So that sort of stuff can still happen for Everton. And I think, you know, there's no reason why they don't. I think they're almost a lock for top six, to be honest. I think they're a real shout for top four the way they're going. I can't see them dropping too much lower than sixth. It's just unbelievable.
Did you have them top six in your predictions?
I did. I think I had them sixth. So
I think I also had them sixth. So
I'm pretty happy with that. Yeah.
Yep. Very, very
speaking
good
of predictions, pick, though.
Yes.
Speaking of predictions.
Here we go.
All right.
Now, this is okay, just before we start, this is big because this can pay off some serious debts, this one, can't it?
There is certainly some meaning behind it, to say the least. And it is time for Damo's Dollars Console Edition.
Show me the money.
Yeah, that's right. Console Edition. Show me the freaking money. Okay, so Microsoft and Sony have recently announced their pre-orders for their new console, and we all want to play FIFA on the new console, whether you're an Xbox man or whether you're a PlayStation man, doesn't matter, or female, either or. And but at the end of the day, we want that next generation of gaming. And you know me, I'm a big gamer, Woody, so I thought, let's make a console edition of Damo's Dollars. So obviously, I don't know if people have caught on to it yet, but it essentially means I've got a multi. I shit you not, it is spot on $74.90. So if you put $10 on it, you get $749 to win, okay? It is a five-leg multi. It's the only way I could sort of do it. So we have to chuck in another one. But Woody, are you ready? Because I'm not going to be able to breathe for, you know, the next couple of minutes whilst I go through.
Mate, you better make this good because this is making it all the way to E3. You better make this good.
I think Sony and Microsoft are cheering for me so more people buy their consoles here. Let's go. All right. Everton versus Liverpool, draw. Get ready for this, Woody. I found this remarkable. Oof. 8 of the last 9 times these two have met at Goodison Park, it's been a draw. 8 of the last 9. Liverpool have scored just 2 goals in their last 6 visits to Goodison Park, whilst Everton have only scored once in their last 6 times hosting Liverpool at Goodison Park. There's been about 4-0-0 draws. But one of the goals that Liverpool scored was when Pickford absolutely cooked it off the crossbar and Origi scored and Klopp ran onto the field. So I don't know if you even count that goal. That was an outlier. So I reckon the only concern is if Liverpool score, but it's not really a concern because we've just spoken about how good Everton are now. They're a different team. If Liverpool score at Goodison Park, I still back Everton to get a goal. So I think maybe a 1-1 here is really good, but at $3.90 for a draw, excellent value, and I do very much like it. Next one.
I have to say quickly, I'm pretty sure that was the game that I called Origi Iwobi, I think.
Yes, potentially it was, yeah. All right, next up. This one's going to ruffle some feathers, but Manchester City versus Arsenal to draw at $5. Now, let's not lose our heads. Okay, we need to find some value here. We're trying to get an Xbox or a PlayStation. So the time for the Gunners is now. They sit fourth, and in all honesty, you'd have to say, other than maybe Liverpool, they probably look the best of the big six clubs. I reckon you can't criticize Arsenal. They've got the job done most weeks. They even took the lead against Liverpool, but Liverpool's class showed. But I think they're still the goods here for a draw. Man City will be without Gabriel Jesus, Aguero, and maybe even Raheem Sterling, who hasn't gone to England duties because of a potential niggle. Now, he does have a history of backing out of England duties under Pep's orders, if you want to call that. But that's no certainty to play against Arsenal when they get back. De Bruyne can't do it all. He's somewhat struggled this year in the first few weeks just because he really is only that form of creativity. Mahrez probably has got on the end of a few, but even for his standards, he probably would have been liked to have been a little bit better. So De Bruyne can't do it all. And honestly, if it was at the Emirates, I'd almost give Arsenal 3 points here. Because it's at the Etihad, I'm going for a draw. Also, one last point that might tip people over the edge in picking this. Arsenal, for the last 8 years, okay, despite having a terrible record against big six clubs away from home, they have scored at the Etihad every single time they've gone there except for last season. I find that quite remarkable considering how bad they usually are against big six clubs. They've scored at the Etihad every time. They aren't that shit in Manchester. Okay, that's all I'm saying. That they do struggle everywhere, but I reckon you give them a sneaky chance at the Etihad. Next up, Tottenham to win versus West Ham, $1.60. Since Mourinho came, Spurs have bagged in 5 goals in 2 games against West Ham, a 3-2 and a 2-0 win. David Moyes' record against Mourinho is terrible, as you can imagine. And I think $1.60 here is really generous because there's just too much Hammers hype at the moment. A 4-0 win and a 3-0 win over Wolves and Leicester is outstanding. But I think the way Spurs has played at Old Trafford, the fact that it's Mourinho's second season, $1.60 to beat West Ham at home, I think you have to back in Spurs here. And they get the job done for $1.60. Yeah, it is value. Yeah, thank you for agreeing with me, Woody. I'm looking at your eyes. You're even quite surprised. You're just like, you know what? This is good stuff. All right. Leg four. All right. In the last 6 times these two have played, 3 of them have had 4 goals or more, yeah? But it's been in alternate ways. So basically, where if the pattern continues, it's going to be over 2.5 goals. So do you hear what I'm saying?
Mate, can you just let everyone know what the game is? Sorry?
Oh, sorry. Chelsea versus Southampton. Did I not say that? I'm getting too excited. Sorry, my apologies. Chelsea versus Southampton over 2.5 goals at $1.52. Last 6 times these teams have played, there's been 3 times it's been over 4 goals. So essentially it was like 3-2, then it was a 1-0. Then it was a 4-1, then it was a 1-0. Like, so if the pattern continues, there's going to be over 2.5 goals in this one. I think given the way the season has been going, the overs on the goal markets is a real good way to go. So $1.52 for over 2.5 to be scored. Take it. Chelsea not looking too good defensively. And look, the Saints have been pretty good defensively, except for when they are up against Spurs where they conceded 5. So who knows which Southampton could rock up. So yeah, that's all I'm saying. Lastly, Leicester versus Aston Villa. Again, over 2.5 goals at $1.58. Now this is value, yeah? I'm usually pretty hesitant to go with the newly promoted teams, even if they've been in the league for a season, because it's like, oh bro, last time Aston Villa, the last like 10 times Aston Villa and Leicester have played, this amount of goals have been scored. It's like, well, guess what? You know, 6 games ago, it was 1996. So let's not get stuck into that. You have to take it off recent form. So they actually played 4 times last season. So we've got a little bit of data here to work with. 3 of the 4 games, over 2.5 goals were scored. And obviously, again, this season, more goals being scored than ever. I think Leicester's defense has actually been a little bit overrated, if I'm being honest. I've read a lot of FPL articles. Or Leicester defense. Well, hang on a minute. Saintu hasn't been that good. They've lost Chilwell. Pereira's injured. Both their fullbacks are incredibly attacking. So I see goals in this one. And Villa, I know they've only conceded 2 goals all year, but they just put 7 past Liverpool. They can find the back of the net. So I'm backing over 2.5 in this one. Easy. And that's a combined total of odds, as I said, $74.90. Chuck a tenner on it. And then you go all the way to your nearest EB Games, JB Hi-Fi, maybe off Amazon if you can't leave the house, depending on where you are in the country. And you just chuck that. You don't even put the deposit on the console. You give them all the cold hard cash in one go. And they'll be like, where did you get that? And you'll be like, Damo's dollars. That's actually just, I tell them that you got it off Damo's dollars just to get some rep going and some momentum here.
Love that, mate. Opening day, release day, it's midnight. You've gone there. You've withdrawn $749 in dollar coins. You just slap them on the bench and you're like, bang,
Damo's dollars. Money.
Show me the money. Fire, that's a good rap, Damo. I'm actually might consider putting $10 on that.
Do it.
It's a good one. It is a good one.
Is that you've got it. Surely you back me in here. I'm doing it. And the thing is, if it gets over the line, I've then got to make sure I cover people's FIFA cost as well. So, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe.
So what's
maybe
the next, I'll just add a little the bit next multi is going to be $60?
Well, I guess like that would mean it'd only be like $6 odds, wouldn't it? If I was putting $10 on it. So I might need to add a bit of sauce to it, because if you put $10 on the $6 odds, obviously that's enough for FIFA. I don't know. Maybe I'll get, yeah. Okay. No, we'll do like $15 odds game of FIFA, and then buy yourself some FIFA points to do a pack opening.
Oh, that's perfect. Maybe a customized controller as well. Who knows?
Yeah, exactly. Done. All right, Woody. I reckon that's pretty much all we have time for, unless I'm forgetting something.
You're not forgetting anything. I think if I had a dollar actually for every time you swore during this episode, I'd probably have more than $749. I could buy myself two consoles. However, I don't have a dollar for every time you swore. So, Damo, I think it's time to wrap it up. We've extended a little bit longer than we thought, but this is what the people want. They want the nightclub. They've been begging for it for the last fortnight, and they've got it. And they're going to lose some money along the way.
I've got serious anxiety because you've just sort of mentioned that it's gone for a long time. For the first time ever, I don't really have a clock in front of me. So we could have just spoken for 3 hours right now, and I genuinely would have no idea. So it'd be interesting to see how long this one's gone for. Apologize if you have had to pause it and go do something else, then come back. But, you know, it's all right. Just bumps the listen numbers up. So no criticism from me. Always feel free to pause and then click play again. No stress.
All right, Damo. Where can you find us on the socials?
You can find us on Twitter at PO Nightclub. And where can you find us on the Instagram? This is different.
Yeah, different setup. Damo, you can find us on the Insta at Premier League Nightclub, or you can just search us up on Facebook, Damo. That is pretty much all we've got time for today. Thank you very much, Damo, and thank you, everyone, for booking at the Premier League Nightclub. We'll catch you soon.
Make sure to subscribe and stuff. See ya.